G'day, I'm Rowan Mackey, and I'm joined by my dad, clinical psychologist Chris Mackey, and this is Psych Spiels and Silver Linings. G'day, Dad. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks, Rowan, and good to be with you again, and especially on an important and, well, timely topic.
Well, absolutely. I think today we have maybe one of our more relevant episodes to what's going on at the moment, maybe in the news, but of course something that's basically relevant at all times and dare I say maybe for us blokes a little bit more relevant as well. So we've called today's episode Dealing with Conflict. And today is going to be the first of three episodes that we do, I suppose in some ways indirectly related to the themes around domestic violence, because unfortunately that is something that is a little bit on the agenda at the moment, isn't it, Dad?
Yes, there's actually been a national cabinet meeting in Australia today where the Prime Minister has met with other senior figures to look to talk about some of the issues and challenges and concerns about domestic violence and ways of addressing that. And so, as you say, we'll be talking about that across three episodes. But when we think about domestic violence from a psychological point of view, in the first instance, it relates to ways, in this case, very poor ways of dealing with conflict. It comes down to ways of dealing with conflict, so we're looking at that as a fundamental issue to start off with before we then look at managing anger and some of the wider kind of social issues that might be relevant. But yes, the context is the concern about domestic violence in Australia, and that's prompted by an increased number of homicides, intimate partner violence, which has been reported this year.
Well, absolutely, and just a shocking state of affairs that we're in that sense. And so we thought, oh, look, Dad, we've got a tiny little platform here, but I suppose with this podcast, we want to, I suppose, maybe contribute in our own way towards making a positive impact on some of these issues. And so we thought, look, we did want to address this in a particular way. And instead of just getting into, I suppose, the nitty gritty of this sort of stuff, we thought we'd maybe look at, as you say, so conflict resolution and some of the issues around conflict, talking about anger, and then we'll use that maybe as a bit of a springboard to talk about some of the wider issues around domestic violence. And I know you and I have some ideas on that as well.
Yes, and so one thing to put it in perspective as well, the theme of dealing with conflict is it's a universal theme when it boils down to it. When we think of any major movie or literature, it's going to have a theme of conflict come up in it, and then the question is how that conflict is resolved. It's part of the drama of life, but it's also part of the natural aspect of life. We'll talk about a definition of conflict later on that shows it is an inevitable part of life, but just also to put it in context, when in the past I've talked with work groups around psychological stresses, there are a couple of main themes that come up in every situation related to stress. One is the theme of burnout, for example, people having too many demands on them. But the second thing is dealing with conflict in the workplace. It's an inevitable part of life in different ways, as we'll reflect on shortly. But yes, it's a widespread theme, an important psychological theme. It comes up in many therapy sessions. With most clients, it comes up at some stage, themes of conflict. And so we ought to recognise that this is a normal part of life, dealing with conflict, but it can be handled very poorly. It can get out of hand. So we might as well look at some of the ways or principles of looking to deal with conflict well.
And this is the second episode that we'll be doing on this topic. I think it was actually our third ever episode on the podcast called Quelling Quarrels in Quarantine. So I suppose that's using the quarantine word there almost gives me a little shiver down my spine. It shows maybe how long we've been going with this podcast. But it's interesting, even looking back now, like that is one of our most popular episodes of all time. It's something that still gets access, even though I think it's over 4 years now since we recorded that episode. So we thought it'd be pertinent to do something. And then obviously everything popped up in the news and we thought, look, we've almost got a way of tying some of this sort of stuff in. And I suppose another way of highlighting how much of a part of everyday life conflict is, like we just had a little bit of a chat off air about maybe some good examples of people, whether it be through movies or TV shows, who I suppose exhibit a healthy way of managing conflict. And found it a little bit hard in some ways. And I must admit, I'm sort of thinking through some of my favourite TV shows, and you're thinking things like Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, and gee, they're not great examples of how to deal with conflict. And as we, I suppose, spoke about it a little bit more, we thought, oh, there's the children's TV show Bluey has a lot of good examples about maybe how to deal with conflict in a family, and that's maybe a bit more of a cartoonish example. And then thought, well, Ted Lasso, that's another good example of maybe dealing with conflict in media. And again, you think about it, it's maybe a little bit kind of cartoonish, almost a bit of a caricature of a person. And then you go to people like, for example, Gandhi and Nelson Mandela, and these such well-respected figures throughout the world, but they're maybe not the most relatable people, partly because of how we look up to them. And I suppose that just suggests that, although I think we eventually got there and were able to come up with a couple that might come up in a moment, but it shows that these things are a little bit more complicated than they seem, because it's not as if there's a real plethora of good examples of how to handle conflict out there.
Yes, and funnily enough, just as you were saying that, we discussed this earlier and I didn't think of it, but now I remember one of the things I really liked about the show Big Brother, because especially the first one or two series of that show I thought were quite, maybe quite authentic in some ways, as in a whole lot of people get in a household, there was a conflict situation, they're trying to win this game, I suppose, but they had to actually relate to other people in different ways and hopefully constructive ways to form alliances. Even though there were many examples, I suppose, of conflict dealt with poorly, they're also honest and authentic conversations amongst it as well. But there was an example of a range of conflict situations being dealt with well or poorly. But when people think of media, TV shows, movies, it is interesting to consider whether the protagonists, the people that we relate to, the extent to which they handled conflict well or poorly. And today we're going to look to spell out a number of the principles that psychologists would draw on to look at healthy and constructive ways of dealing with conflict and to gauge that.
And so I suppose it's a bit of a silly question in some ways, but I suppose, what is conflict? Like, we have such a negative connotation around the word conflict. Like, if I was to say there's a conflict over the other side of the world, like, you think of things like war and all these just quite dark themes. But you mentioned before that conflict isn't necessarily something that's inherently good or bad. It is a part of life. And so I suppose, yeah, what is conflict in maybe a psychological sense?
Okay, and so just to expand on what you've said there and lead up to what conflict is by definition, just as you're saying, we often have a negative connotation of conflict. So when I found going into different kind of work groups, one of the exercises we might do in a session is put the word conflict up on a whiteboard and ask people, what words come to mind? What associations do you have to conflict? And early on, people tend to say frustration, anger, feeling stuck, difficulty, battle, it could be things along these lines, arguing. And then later on, gradually, it might come up differing opinions, viewpoint, communication. People start to notice that there are also some potential positive things that might be associated with conflict. And we stop and think about what conflict is. And basically, it's any situation where one person's needs or interests are in contrast to another's. That could be as simple as two friends wanting to watch a movie, but one wants to watch a drama and the other one feels more like a comedy that day. There's a conflict. It might not be a really big conflict, but their interests are different. Or a family, different family members might want to go to a different place on a holiday for different reasons. Or in a couple, they might be having different views on whether they spend their money on, say, entertainment or a holiday or paying off a house deposit. It's natural, even when people are getting on with each other well, there will be different interests and needs that we have. So basically, the definition of a conflict is there's some kind of contrasting interest or need, and people can't necessarily both get what they want out of that situation 100%. Because there's this relative clash or difference. So basically, conflict comes down to different wants. Well, what would happen in a world where we didn't have conflict, we didn't have different wants? Everybody would be a robot. nobody would have any particular preferences or desires that could possibly conflict with anyone else's. We'd be in a mechanical, clockwork, dare I say, preordained world. Wouldn't be much interest in that. Everyone would be the same cookie cutter kind of model of everyone else. So in other words, conflict is an inevitable part of us being human individuals, having wants, preferences, interests, desires. In other words, conflict is just part of life.
And it's an interesting one as well. Like, even as you were describing that there, like, one thing that came to mind for me is, like, I'm someone who enjoys a hearty discussion, let's just say, at times. And even, you know, like a bit of a debate. And, you know, as I say, it's very much discussion-based. But there has been times when people have said to me, like, why are you arguing in this situation? And I must admit, I don't necessarily see it as an argument. It's more of a robust discussion in order to help integrate another person's perspective into my own. And so I suppose when you're looking at things like, you know, having these almost like fun little debates and stuff that you have, and, you know, I can think of a couple of friends that come to mind who we have some really good discussions, and, you know, they might get a little bit robust at times, never personal or any of this sort of stuff. It's just a way of conversing almost that pushes each other's boundaries in a way that's going to expand our horizons a little bit. And to me, it just highlights that there is an element of conflict that is about integrating different perspectives. But then the issue is that it can go badly, and it can go in a direction where there isn't much productive that comes out of that. And that is the nature of conflict in some ways. Of it is about integrating perspectives, and there can be all these benefits that come from it. But when it goes badly, it can be horrendous for everyone involved and those around them.
Yes, and I think that there's something that you're saying there that can be very healthy about conflict, of considering different views and allowing different viewpoints. And when you mention integrating someone else's viewpoint with your own or vice versa, yes, there could be something healthy about that, but there also could be something healthy about sometimes each being able to have your own different viewpoint. It's not fully reconcilable or integratable, but they can sit alongside each other, like live and let live. The other thing I'd mention about that kind of example that you mentioned is, I suspect it also depends on what people are up for. And you'll have a number of friends who are really interested in that kind of debate and kind of arguing with each other and kind of enjoy that, in which case your underlying interests might be similar. Where that kind of situation could maybe not work quite so well as if the other person's maybe not so interested in that kind of debate, if you like, or almost like game, so to speak, and then that wouldn't maybe work so well. So it's also the context in that situation. But like you say, I enjoy some robust discussion with friends, and there's often a bit of humour that leavens it, that shows that it's not kind of mean-spirited or anything like that. But yeah, having different viewpoints is part of the colour of life. And we don't want to have all our friends being a cookie cutter of us, or family members. Celebrating difference and diversity is part of what's healthy in life.
Well, certainly. And yeah, I think you do have to maybe pick your battles a little bit with that sort of thing. But even that terminology, pick your battles, it's interesting. It's almost got this negative connotation around it. And it is worth pointing out that there is a difference between having a bit of a, you know, a fun, robust discussion compared to when a serious conflict situation arises that it might have some real complexity to it. And it might take a lot to reconcile that for both people. So I suppose today is about looking at maybe some of the things that can help resolve some of the conflict when it starts to maybe veer a little bit off course and it loses that kind of fun aspect to it. So I suppose looking at conflict in terms of it not necessarily being inherently good or bad, it is just a part of life. How do you deal with conflict?
Okay, well, I think part of it is considering the positive things about conflict, because we're aware of where the negative things can come up. It can lead to a kind of a negative competition at times, where people might try and, you know, lord their interests over others, at times mistreat others. If it leads to forceful, aggressive anger, it can interfere with relationships if handled poorly. But when conflict is managed well, meaning we allow for other people to have different viewpoints and different wants and different needs to ourselves, that's a healthy part of life, that kind of diversity. Then when you think about it, what are some positive things about conflict? Well, it helps you know yourself better because you know from your feelings in a conflict situation that something's important to you or not so important to you. You learn more about what's important to the other person or not so important to them. So you know yourself and other people better. It helps you clarify what you want in a particular situation or what your values might be. But ultimately also, as many people experience, conflict situations can actually help your relationships. If we use collaboration, if we draw on ways of collaborating with others, show that we're interested in them as well as, like, say, our own views and our own wants, then the other person picks up that even if we have a different view or desire to them, we want them to get a fair bit of what they want as well. We want to work in with them and consider them, sometimes make compromises or even sacrifices for them. Those kind of things can enhance a relationship, especially if we kind of get each other, where we're coming from. Hey, this is what I want. This is what, you know, you want. And as a psychiatrist once described as one of the most useful things I learned from that particular colleague, he said a whole lot of teenage years and young adult life is learning how to go for what you want without pissing other people off too much. I think that's a fair basic way of looking at it, but over and above not just, well, not pissing other people off, we can actually genuinely consider, well, I care about this person, this relationship. I want them to get a fair bit of what they want as well. I genuinely want that. It's not just I want to get what I want without them being too upset. It's a true win-win situation that tends to enhance relationships.
And I suppose one of the main things that I remember from that first episode that we did about conflict four or so years ago now was about conflict styles and even how they can relate to animals, which we'll discuss in a moment. Because I suppose as you were describing that there, one of the things that came up was it seems to me that conflict can go much more poorly when there's a power imbalance. You know, if your boss at work might just be, you know, very much a my way or the highway person and not necessarily give you a way to respond with any sense of agency and all this sort of stuff. Like, you might get into these situations where there's a power imbalance and conflict can come out of that. And it seems to me that some of the conflict styles can help address that power imbalance in a way, and some of them might even slightly reinforce that power imbalance. So what are those conflict styles and how do they relate to the animals?
Yes, well, here we're getting to, as you were referring to earlier, more healthy, less healthy ways of dealing with conflict, which underlies our ways of dealing with anger and other reactions as well. Healthy ways, unhealthy ways. Basically, healthy ways are going to combine two things, and that is going for some of your own interests, what's most important to you, but considering the other person's interests and the relationship. So what does it mean if we're expressing ourselves, going for what we want, but also looking to preserve or even enhance our relationship and the mutual understanding? Basically, the healthy ways are going to tend to be what we would call more assertive styles. Assertive styles of dealing with conflict is where you express yourself while respecting the other person. I want this. I think this. I feel this. So I think, I feel, I want, and interested in what the other person thinks and feels and wants. It's even more enlightened in conflict situations to start off with your ears. Start off listening to what the other person thinks and feels and wants in a particular situation, maybe even before you bring up your preferences, because then you know more the context that you're dealing with and you're showing you're interested in the other person and the relationship in the first place. So they're what we would call more assertive styles we're dealing with conflict. And shortly I'll mention some animals that we can relate to that. But then what will tend not to work so well is more aggressive ways of dealing with conflict, and that's where I go for my own interests, but I'm not so interested in the relationship or what you want. So forceful, aggressive styles, what I want, not so concerned about the relationship. Or there can be other times where we put so much concern or weight on the relationship that we don't go for what we want, and we call them passive styles. So basically, I'll give up a bit of what I want or a fair bit of what I want so you can get what you want, because the relationship, I want to preserve that, so I won't say so much, I think this or I want that, because you might disagree and I don't want that to happen, that kind of thing. So broadly, and look, I'll mention the animals as specific examples shortly, but if we've got that in mind, that there are two main dimensions that come to conflict situations, how much we value what we want, how much we value the relationship and consider what other people want, and then assertiveness combines both interests, aggressive behaviour, I'll just go for my own interests mainly, passive, I'll mainly prioritise the relationship over and above what I want.
And it's interesting as well, because like, certainly don't want to make too many generalisations here. Like, I'm, you know, there's nuance to just about every situation, but I know at the practice it's a common thing, for example, where men will come in for anger issues, and whether they've come in off their own battle, their partner has encouraged them to come in, and that's what leads them here. And it strikes me that anger issues are maybe related to that aggressive style of conflict. And I know it's something that's well, certainly happened, I think you were saying up to 30 years or so, where a lot of women will come in for assertiveness training or help being more assertive. And it strikes me that that's maybe something that's a result of people being a little bit more passive. Like, again, don't want to make sort of generalizations, but I'm going to make a huge one here. But at the same time, like, maybe it's a tendency of men to go a little bit more with the aggressive style of conflict, and that can lead to issues through their anger. And maybe it's a slightly more common tendency of women to be a little bit more passive and look to preserve the relationship and prioritise the relationship, and maybe that relates to being a little bit more passive.
Look, I really relate to what you bring up, because it says so much of early things I learnt starting working as a therapist way back in the 1980s. What you're talking about now is very relevant to why I became very interested in, say, anger management, as that was my first specialty in psychology. And how I was led to that, it follows on some of the themes that you're bringing up that are also relevant to themes of why is it that depression in women is about double the frequency of depression in men. And problematic anger reactions and aggressive behaviour is so much more frequent in men. And what I noticed in the early days when I was working at the local psychiatric hospital, mainly seeing outpatient clients, many with depression, many women with depression, part of the reason they seem to be depressed is because of a passivity of how they would deal with pursuing their interests in everyday life. That could include conflict situations, but just basically recognising and looking to act on their needs and interests. So we looked at introducing assertiveness therapy. We knew that could help with depression. But then what I found is my early clients that we were working with assertiveness training with, they'd come in and they'd talk about this escalated conflict at home that wasn't helping them so much. What was happening there was that their male partners were becoming more indignant and reactive as the clients I was seeing were learning to speak up a bit more about what they wanted or their point of view. And then I finally twigged, to help address this, I needed to look for the male partner to come in an early stage that I was working with his wife, say, and I'd say to him, look, you know, your wife is depressed. The person would sort of recognise that and say, look, I think there's a way that I can help her, or the therapy that we use can help her. And the husband would be happy about that. And I'd say, but look, there's maybe a little bit of a complication with this, that in order for your wife to become less depressed, she's probably going to need to learn to maybe express herself a little bit more, say a little bit more about what she wants and things that'll make a difference to her and her interests and things like that. And that might be an adjustment for you, because you might hear her sounding like she's being, well, more forthright, you're asking for things, you might not be used to that as much. In the vast majority of situations, the husbands were like happy to hear that. They just wanted to know their wife would be less depressed, and they got their head around it. And so by bringing that up earlier on, being proactive, there was much less of this kind of problem. But it was also clear that with a subset of the partners, that they had real problems with their ways of dealing with conflict. It wasn't being passive, it was being aggressive. They just go straight to a more forceful, blunt way of going about things, which seems in retrospect to be certainly quite gendered and stereotypical, maybe even more so in those days than now. But then I thought, well, look, we need to address the other half of the equation in this situation, or the other side, one other side of the equation. And I started up anger management groups that I knew had been going in an inpatient centre in Melbourne. So we set up the first outpatient anger management groups in Victoria at the time. And that basically came from recognising this complication of encouraging women to express themselves more. So that shows that there's more complication in relationships that might meet the eye. And deep down, people prefer to get on with their partners. They prefer to have positive relationships. But often people aren't so aware of, dare I say, the skills needed in either expressing oneself or in curbing one's more forceful reactions and finding other healthy ways of responding to conflict situations, including recognising how much difference it makes to show interest and respect for your partner and genuinely want them to get more of what they want, because then, well, life goes so much better for both partners in a relationship.
And so it strikes me that maybe at a broad level, there's an element of this which is looking at how can we maybe respond with our frontal lobes in terms of there's going to be a lot of conflict situations that bring up a lot of emotions for people, and maybe just an element of being human in a way is that we're prone to emotion and we're prone to acting maybe out of emotion at certain times. And it strikes me that that's a situation that really could look to, well, I suppose, engage someone's frontal lobes about the situation. And it seems to me that one of the great ways of maybe thinking about this and in slightly simpler terms is the animals and how they relate to conflict styles. So what are the animals and what are the conflict styles that they correspond with?
Okay, look, it's good you bring me back to that, because yes, there is an exercise often used with groups, in work groups, but it could be any professional group. I was introduced to this in the early 80s, and it remains one of the most useful kind of ways I have experienced to think about conflict. And we were invited in this exercise, a whole group of psychologists were invited to reflect on this notion. What kind of animal did we most relate to in terms of our main conflict styles? So people can think about this. One kind of animal might be a teddy bear. How does a teddy bear deal with things? You know, cute, congenial, maybe friendly, open. Now, what's happening with a teddy bear? Now, people can relate to maybe, you know, being a teddy bear in some ways, but if that's a person's main conflict style, we can think, well, what's the person doing? They're being accommodating. What does accommodating mean? We think about it in terms of how important is the relationship, how important is going for your own goals, your own interests. They're two dimensions of conflict. Okay, the teddy bear is so interested in the relationship that might give up their own goals. Oh, that's fine. You want to see that movie? Yeah, that's fine. I'd like to see that too. Oh, whatever you reckon. Oh, you'd like to go on holidays there? Yeah, okay, let's do that. Very quick to agree to what the other person wants. So we'd call that accommodating, and so that would be one of the more passive conflict styles.
Or it seems to come up a little bit with, for example, people who are referred to as people pleasers, or people might even refer to themselves as a people pleaser, and it has this connotation that maybe you don't feel confident at all times putting your view forward in a way that's going to be listened to and is going to allow you to essentially get what you want in a particular situation.
That's a great way of putting it, a people pleaser that people could relate to. So if that's someone's main conflict style, get a sense that, well, that might be a problem in a number of situations in everyday life. Let's contrast that with another conflict style, a turtle. A turtle's going to tend to think, oh, I don't want conflict, oh, I don't like conflict. Oh, no, that just ends up in just arguments and it's really difficult. So now I'm going to steer clear of conflict. Like everyone loses out in a conflict situation. So we can view a turtle as being withdrawing from a conflict situation. And so the turtle's giving up what it wants often, But unlike the teddy bear, well, let's think of it if you're the other person in a conflict and the person's withdrawing from you. They're staying away. They're not engaging with you. Now, that actually doesn't help the relationship too much, that withdrawing. So unfortunately, the turtle's view of conflict as just being like a lose-lose situation is going to turn into no good. That means that the turtle's valuing not only their own wants or interests, but also the relationship is valued relatively low in that situation. So there's an example of two passive conflict styles. Don't go so much for what you want, but unlike the teddy bear, which values the relationship highly, the turtle in withdrawing is in some ways devaluing the relationship.
And it's really interesting, I think, to think in terms of, for example, fight, flight, freeze, and submit. Like, it seems to me that the teddy bear maybe has an element of submission to it in terms of not putting your own view forward in a particular way. The turtle has an element of flight to it, so you're removing yourself from the situation and not putting yourself forward in a particular way. And maybe some of the other conflict styles are relating to the fight response as well. So what's maybe the next animal?
Okay, but just as an aside, I think that's helpful what you're describing with the turtle, that kind of avoidance. Now, it might be that the turtle's in flight mode, but also can come across the turtle just doesn't care. They're just not engaged. So it's watching out how sometimes might be seen as well. But okay, so more forceful style, the shark. So it can relate to that. We might have known in a workplace, someone might have previously been in a relationship with, or might have been a friend who's pretty quick to anger. I'm thinking of another TV show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's pretty quick to say some pretty blunt, forceful kind of comments kind of thing. So the shark will tend to go for what they want. Their own goals or interests, that's what's paramount. But in going for their own goals, not showing so much consideration for the relationship.
And that strikes me as one where if someone had anger issues, there would be a strong likelihood that they would be a shark in that situation.
Exactly. So when we're talking about domestic violence, we're often talking about shark kind of behaviour. But slightly more complicated than it looks as well, because often when people engage in shark behaviour, they might have previously been a turtle for quite a while. Keep it in, keep it in, keep it in. We'll talk about this next week too, where we talk about, say, the anger management side of things. People are more prone to violent behaviour sometimes if they over-control their hostility at first. Sometimes it's from people being too quick to anger and they're not trying to curb it at all. But if people try and keep a lid on their frustrations or whatever without having another way of expressing it, then that actually can increase the risk of shark behaviour rather than decrease it. But that raises the issue of what might be some more healthy styles that involve being able to express oneself but yet considering the other person. And that's where a classic example might be thinking of the owl. The owl, being wise, has the view that conflict can be a positive experience because it actually can help you enhance the relationship through showing that consideration of other people, trying to go for a win-win approach, looking to get both of what you want. An owl will look to collaborate. So whereas the shark attacks, the owl is collaborative, it collaborates, and that will tend to enhance the relationship.
And it seems the sort of thing as well, like these are such almost simple ways of looking at things. And you just hinted there that maybe there is a little bit more complication to it in terms of if someone behaves like a turtle for a particular time, the shark tendencies might come out a little bit maybe unchallenged in some ways. And I wonder if, like, obviously this seems to be maybe a good way of talking about it with kids as well, that sort of get some of these ideas across in a fairly simple way. But I wonder if we can almost look at these things as well in terms of like that hot and cold tap idea. Like, you obviously want to have a little bit of teddy bear sometimes, but maybe also want to have a little bit of shark at sometimes if the situation calls for it. Or we want to be an owl, you know, basically in most situations. But look, if we're just going through life, you know, looking to sort of have these kind of heavy, deep discussions with everyone, like that probably doesn't resonate with everyone at all times. So it strikes me that we can almost look at things in terms of like a bit of a hot tap or a cold tap. I need a little bit more of this, or I need a little bit less of that. Or maybe if you resonate with one of the particular styles, well, you can think to yourself, oh, you know, how can I get a little bit more shark in me? Or how can I be a little bit more like a teddy bear today?
Yes, look, you're anticipating one of the main themes that we'll reflect on, which is what is the best conflict style and how that's a more complex question than it looks. There's actually something to be said for each of these styles in the context. But I'll mention one other example of a conflict style that we haven't covered yet, and that's the idea of compromise. Because it's a bit like what you said potentially with the owl. If you're trying to work through the ins and outs of a situation and trying to see that everyone gets what they want, but what if it's either a trivial situation, so there's no point spending that amount of time, or what if it's a situation that's, well, maybe almost like a bit of a wicked problem, like not everyone can get all of what they want, so it's going to take something else other than a complete win-win situation. Like, quite frankly, what's a complete win-win situation in Gaza, as if that is going to exist with this eons-long conflict between Palestinians and Jews, for example. Like, it's worthwhile looking to be an owl in that situation, no doubt, with some kind of negotiation, but is there going to be a complete win-win situation there? There's likely to need to be compromise in some way. So in many of the conflicts of everyday life, one of the most important things, one of the most important measures of a healthy relationship is people being prepared to compromise, because that involves giving up a bit of what you want so the other person could get more of what they want. So this is like a realistic, real-world way in many situations of showing you're interested both in, well, your own interests as well as the relationship. So basically, artful compromises or willing compromises or being prepared to compromise, that's part of what is so important for maintaining relationships. And so there's something else that you anticipated there, and this is the exercise that we do in groups when we put up the picture of a teddy bear, a turtle, an owl, a fox and a shark, and we ask people, what's the best conflict style? So it might be a group of teachers. I say, okay, what's the best conflict style? It's natural to start to think of, well, the owl, of course. But like you were saying, it's not always going to be, you know, possible or appropriate or worthwhile spending all the time looking to be an owl. Maybe compromise is better, or maybe sometimes something is so important to be a bit more of a shark. Dare I say, in the current issues in Australia where people are, well, I suppose, even demonstrating against domestic violence, and looking to be unambiguously clear in how unacceptable it is and how much needs to change and politicians need to do more, dare I say there's a little bit more of the shark coming through in that kind of situation as well. In other words, more forceful ways of expressing the concerns, which might be completely appropriate. Actually, maybe it's being even more owl-like, maybe it's more wise to show a bit more of a forceful concern about that interest to make it more likely that something will be done. So it just kind of shows, if we ask the notion of what's the best conflict style, gradually people come to realise, oh, it's not just one. It depends on the situation. It depends on how important in actuality your goal or interest is compared to the relationship. And I'll just say, if you go into a milk bar, you get a salad roll and you've been shortchanged 10 cents. Is it worth having a big conflict with that? It's not that important. And you're not that concerned about, you know, what's happening with the relationship. You can be a turtle. You can think, don't worry about it. Forget about it. It's not important enough to, you know, bother about. Sometimes there's situations we might say, don't sweat the small stuff, which might be similar. What if we're in a situation where, like, just say, a vulnerable partner is looking for our support with something? Well, maybe it's worth being a teddy bear in that situation. To hell with what you want. That's not so important as the other person feeling supported. Or maybe if you're dealing with, well, it might be dealing with a boss or a supervisor in a certain situation. If you don't listen to what they're interested in or what they want from you, you might lose your job. That might be worth being a teddy bear as well. But just say if someone was starting to look like they were going to be physically aggressive towards a child. Well, you'd want to be a bit of a shark in that situation rather than just trying to easily compromise with someone. You want to be very clear that that's not okay. And then with an owl, there are many situations where there can be a win-win. Two people want to see a movie, but one doesn't want to see a violent movie and the other one doesn't just feel like a heavy drama that day. So maybe they choose a comedy because that will suit them both, or some different combination of that. And the quintessential example of where an owl would work well is being really clear on listening to the other person's interests. So, for example, two sisters both arguing over an orange. Well, you'd think, well, compromise, cut it in half. They have half each. But one sister, being wise, asks the other one, what do you want the orange for? Oh, I want it for the orange juice. I wanted some orange juice. Then the other sister says, oh, look, I want the rind. I'm cooking an orange cake. They can both get fully what they want. But there are many situations where it won't be like that. But to have that kind of bent of listening to other people first, valuing the relationship, still valuing what you want, when we think of what the best conflict styles are, yes, it depends on the situation. However, it helps to have an assertive conflict style as one of your main conflict styles. So this is where I'd invite people listening to think of what's your main conflict style and then what's your secondary conflict style. Most of us have a main style we go to in conflict situations and then a backup style. Is our main style being a teddy bear? Are we a people pleaser a lot of the time? Is it being a turtle? Do we think, look, conflict, it just doesn't lead anywhere. Best to steer clear of it any way we can. Do we look to be an owl and really listen to the other person and talk through things and express what we want as well? Do we look to compromise in some ways as a main kind of style? Or do we look to be a bit of a shark? And sometimes we look back and think, oh, look, I've reacted a lot more forcefully than I needed to. It helps if we have at least a primary or a secondary style. We want one of our main styles to be an assertive style, either the owl or sometimes we use the notion of a fox for compromise. I haven't used that today because it gets a little bit complicated. People can think of a fox as just being cunning. But the idea is a fox is smarter than a shark, realizing that actually you end up getting more of what you want, being prepared to compromise anyway. So there's that notion of, do we have a compromising or a collaborative style as a main side of things? If we don't, it's really important that we develop that, or we will be more prone to depression, resentment and frustration in relationships and, less likely to get some of the main goals that we want to achieve in life.
And it seems to me that maybe the owl style maybe gets at that idea of the frontal lobes a little bit more. Like the owl seems to represent a little bit about the frontal lobes there, but I suppose at the same time, you know, if you get too close to an owl, it'll peck the shit out of you. So there's times where even maybe an owl can tend a little bit towards the shark. But I suppose my next question then is, how much influence do we have over these things? Because like you mentioned, our main and secondary styles of managing conflict, like, to what degree is it the case where, for example, they're developed in childhood and then there's an aspect to which we're almost destined to have that style, you know, forever, or at least until there's some imbalance which kind of pushes us to the complete opposite end of the spectrum, like becoming a turtle to an owl? Like, to what degree can we almost be proactive in the styles that we choose?
Okay, now our conflict styles basically relate to patterns of behaviour. And that means that they tend to be learnt and therefore they can be unlearnt. This is the positive message. This is the optimistic message. If we find that our ways of dealing with conflict are getting out of balance, if people are feeling maybe at times depressed and frustrated because they're not finding ways of asserting themselves more, or if people find that they're acting aggressively or others are acting aggressively, and so that's really not respecting the relationship so much, people can change these things. And to understand the learning, the first learning will be from one's parents, typically. And basically, one of the main reasons we ask people in a first therapy session often, a common question that we ask relates to parents' ways of dealing with conflict. We ask, how did your father tend to deal with conflict situations? And later, how did your mother tend to deal with conflict situations? Because especially the further back in time you go, usually the person's own main ways of dealing with conflict situations, because we'd ask them that as well, how do you tend to deal with conflict situations? It was often a combination of their parents' styles. If both parents were passive, the client would tend to be passive. If the client had a parent who was quite aggressive, so if their father was often aggressive, they'd be more prone, say a man growing up, to be aggressive themselves. There's often a learning kind of pattern that happened there. But I'd say over the last 20 years, like even in schools, there's more emphasis on talking about psychological issues. Positive psychology would have focused on that a fair bit, but also just the notion of talking with children about ways of dealing with things. Then people do tend to learn also more in popular media. You could even find, I suppose, from things like Big Brother shows and people talking about that, people would reflect on different ways of dealing with conflict. It's more of the popular culture these days. There's lots of self-help books that would relate to ways of dealing with conflict over, well, certainly the last couple of decades. So it used to be the main learning was from one's parents, but then, of course, other peer relationships, mentors could change that. But over the last 20 years, 30 years, there's been a lot more in terms of self-help, discussion with things, and then more in schools the last maybe 10, 15, 20 years. So that's where there can be more explicit learning. But here's a tip in how people can go about learning to address healthy ways of dealing with conflict. Think of what your least preferred or least used style is. Because each of these could be worthwhile in a particular context, as we've discussed. So if anyone underuses a particular style, it might be a vulnerability. For example, we wouldn't think of a turtle as being generally a very positive conflict style because it's withdrawing. However, what if the person is never a turtle? They can't leave something alone. They can't shut up in a conflict situation. They're always speaking up or putting their view forward, and it might be just out of balance and affecting their relationships with other people. Sometimes it's also worth just letting something go. It's just not important. You know, learn not to sweat the small stuff. So if someone thought, oh, this is good, I don't use the turtle at all, well, that's probably not good. Each of them have a purpose. If we never use the teddy bear, or if that was our lowest, then if we can't be so accommodating, we're probably going to have more prevalent conflict with other people, more frequent conflict, more intense than it needs to be, because we don't have ways of softening it so effectively. You know, being friendly, cuddly, open, that kind of thing, that can soften conflict situations sometimes called for. If we never with a shark, then maybe we can't really stand up for ourselves when it's really important. And that can lead us to be more frustrated, not have our needs met. The other person doesn't realise how seriously we're concerned about this particular issue. If we never had the owl, that would be a real pity, because we're not likely to get the real win-win situations happening. We're not looking for what's optimal in a situation. But if someone almost never compromised and they thought it was a real downside looking to be, well, more balanced about it, give and take. And I've known not many people, but a few people have highlighted, oh yeah, they don't like the idea of compromise. That's being wishy-washy. Well, gosh, that can lead to problems, because there are a whole lot of real-world challenges that there's no ideal and neat solution to. Like the Gottmans, who did a lot of research on marriage and marital conflict, relationship conflict, described that about two-thirds of some of the major conflicts that couples have are not fully resolvable. There's not fully a win-win solution to that. One might be of one religion, one another, and so they have different views how their children might be raised. They might have quite different family backgrounds in terms of how they manage finances and would never be completely in agreement how to deal with that. And yet there's still ways of accommodating each other's interests and wanting the other person to get a fair bit of what they want, of looking to enhance your relationship, maintain your relationship in the meantime, and that often involves compromise. That often is the best way overall that people can get on well with their loved ones and colleagues.
Well, that's interesting the way you described that, because I suppose maybe when we look at things like even, you know, personality elements, like we can look at character strengths, we can look at just strengths in general, weaknesses, like a lot of this sort of stuff seems to be developed almost involuntarily in some ways. But it's interesting you put that emphasis on, for example, compromise, because it seems to me that compromise and collaboration are two of almost the main themes of this sort of stuff that we want a little bit more of. And although the animals are a great kind of simple way of looking at these sort of things, it seems to me that part of what we almost take from that is that it's worth looking to collaborate or compromise where appropriate. That's not necessarily going to be the case for every situation. And maybe those terms of collaboration and compromise are things that we recognize as maybe skills that we can work on a little bit. There seems to be maybe a little bit more malleability around our ability to compromise and collaborate than just, for example, you know, I'm a, you know, teddy bear, shark, owl, whatever it is.
Yes, very much as you're describing, it comes down to skills. So changing behaviours, unlearning old behaviours, learning new behaviours, curbing when we're doing too much of the shark or the turtle or the teddy bear, putting something in its place. And like you're suggesting, some of the main skills, like the owl or compromise, collaborating or compromising, that includes using I statements. I think, I feel, I want, as opposed to you this or you always that or you shouldn't this or you shouldn't that. Putting one's own view and interest forward whilst being very interested in the other person's and often listening to the other person first, it really helps. That notion of we've got two ears and one mouth, using that ratio, listening to about double what we look to express, that's a really good guideline for healthy ways of dealing with conflict. It can defuse a lot of conflict that way. But there's the other kind of proviso. If we find that any of those conflict styles we're not using much at all, there's a clue, just dial that up a bit, nudge that up a bit. Even if the one that we don't use at all is a shark, even if it's a turtle or we think it's otherwise a negative kind of thing, no, there are times when those reactions are called for, those styles are called for. But particularly looking at expressing ourselves whilst listening to others, going for some of the main things that we want, but showing respect, that interest in the other person getting what they want as well.
It's interesting how you describe that there. Like, it reminds me of basically a negotiation style that I believe came out of Africa. And I think it's something that they use at the UN now, but basically involves two parties coming together. And the first thing that they do is kind of set their boundaries. So they say, look, I'm not willing to cross this line right here. And then the other party will say, look, fair enough, I'm not willing to cross this line right here. And from that point, it almost gives you a little bit of middle ground to work from. So you can go, okay, that's fair enough, I won't sort of encroach on your boundaries as long as you don't encroach on my boundaries. And then it gives you almost a vehicle to compromise, knowing that both parties aren't going to, well, I suppose, yeah, encroach on each other's boundaries, and both sides are going to be able to put their interests forward.
Yes, I like that notion of middle ground. If we're starting to work with middle ground, we're in that kind of space where we've got scope to get a fair bit of what we want and others as well. So I think that looking for the middle ground is a great way of showing respect for other people whilst showing an interest in getting a fair bit of what we want out of life as well.
And it seems to me that that is a big part of it in terms of almost looking at things in a way that's, for lack of a better term, good faith. Like, a lot of this stuff sort of seems to work when both sides have a bit of a good faith attitude, but maybe it's a hint at some of the times when we need to employ, whether it be the turtle or the shark, when it's not a good faith situation.
Yes, and look, actually, I'm going to mention one final thing here. You mentioned the word faith that relates to spirituality or a spiritual dimension in life, and I've talked before that something that I relate to that way is the theme of synchronicity or meaningful coincidence. So this is, I suppose, goes on a bit of a tangent, and I'm thinking of synchronicity because I'm meeting with my synchronicity colleagues in America late next month, so I have that a bit on the mind, but one of the things that really intrigues me about synchronicity, meaningful coincidences that connect people, is that example of when you think of someone you haven't seen for ages and then they email you just at that time, you know, within the next 10 minutes or something like that, and you think, how did that happen? Or you run into someone overseas in the most improbable circumstance. Or it turns out there's something so overlapping in your experience and someone else's, you think it's such a remarkable kind of coincidence. But they're these experiences that can lead us to feel connected with each other. And there is that term propinquity, when you think of someone and then encounter them very soon afterwards. There's a clue that as human beings, we're connected with each other in consciousness more than we otherwise might anticipate. It's not just random, these things. And one of the things that that kind of makes me think of is I think that our link as humans with each other as part of humanity is a little bit like the link between cells and the human body. What helps the health of one cell presumably is of benefit to all the other cells in the body. I think the same thing with our relationships and as human beings. Basically, if we in whatever way have a deep appreciation of our connection with other people, and in my experience, synchronicity adds to that kind of feeling of connection with other people, you can't help but consider how it's of benefit if other people get a fair bit of what they want as well. It's what we might call the I-thou connection, that we're not just separate objects or completely, you could almost say completely separate consciousnesses. There's something that links us in a fundamental way. The more we have an appreciation of that, which many people have through their religion, for example. I'm not a particularly religious person, but that's where some people have a strong sense of this connection with each other. Anything that adds to our sense of connection with each other, I think can greatly help our approach to dealing with conflict.
Well, I suppose just to almost finish on that that maybe positive note about conflict, like notwithstanding that what prompted us to talk about some of this stuff was maybe the negative sides of conflict, but that connection element is such a big part of this sort of stuff. Like, you know, we can either go through life burning every bridge that we come across and failing to hold on to relationships, or we can recognize that we are a little bit more connected. And I suppose looking at some of this conflict management stuff, like recognizing that people are going to have different styles and we're going to have our own style and there's ways of maybe manipulating that in a positive way, kind of in our favor, that's where I think we can really, I suppose, learn from other people's perspectives a lot more. Like if we really put ourselves in the other person's shoes and realize, hold on, this person's, you know, maybe coming at me from a completely different angle to what I'm approaching the situation as, you know, why is that? What is their situation that maybe isn't similar for me? Or just allows you to really help to recognize that we are different in certain ways, but there are ways that we can kind of collaborate and compromise. And if that's kind of done well, or if it doesn't go badly, we can gain so much from that in terms of inherently we're coming from two completely different directions. And if we're able to find a way that is, you know, somewhat similar in terms of going forward, like we're going to learn things from those situations. So I suppose it's a nice way to finish to recognize that, yeah, there is that kind of connection between all of us. And we almost have two options, you know, burn every bridge or look to, yeah, really gain something from the people that we come across.
Yes, and what you're saying there, it reminds me of the benefits in recent years, the last decade or so much more emphasis on diversity and the benefit of diversity. That's actually in some ways welcoming more conflict into our lives in terms of, well, at least different viewpoints or perspectives if we manage that well, we all have richer lives. So I think that you put that well. But people will pick up from this episode, which started off with this context about domestic violence and especially intimate partner-related violence. What we're talking about when we look at domestic violence, it's not just doing less of something. At first it seems like, do less of that. Be less angry. Don't do that so much. That's also, and particularly think of what we need to do more of. More of listening. More of respecting the other person. And in doing so, sometimes more of expressing ourselves. Not just putting a stopper in it and think, oh, I shouldn't say or do anything or go for what I want. No, we're looking at healthy ways of going for what you want. Because if people have healthy ways of going for what they want and having positive relationships, there's no need for domestic violence.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. And that point about expressing yourself, like that to me is just such a central theme of this sort of thing. Like there's, you know, whether you're a shark or a teddy bear or a turtle, potentially there are some issues with expressing yourself, you know, whether it's either not saying something and getting your point across or whether it's, you know, getting your point across a little bit too forcefully. I think what a lot of the conflict resolution stuff is about is how can you express yourself in a way that's both respectful and healthy? And that's where I suppose I think it does relate a little bit to domestic violence. So, well, thanks for chatting with me about all this today, Dad. It's been good getting into some of this sort of stuff. It's an interesting topic. It has been one that stood out from one of our earlier episodes, both as one that's been pretty popular and one that I've even thought back to at different times. So looking to the next episode, obviously I think we might be focusing a little bit more on the shark side of things if we're talking about anger issues and anger management. But I'm sure we'll add a few layers beyond the simple archetypes that we've spoken about today. So thanks for chatting with me about all this today, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thanks, Rowan. Same here. And hopefully what we've talked about today provides some kind of helpful context for talking about ways of dealing with anger.